This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Later in the program, we'll take a look at why we believe weird things. But first, Mars is headlining in the heavens this week. If you haven't gotten a chance to see it yet, it's not too late to catch a glimpse of the red planet as it makes its closest pass to the Earth in 60,000 years. And ever since ancient astronomers painted Mars with long water-filled canals, scientists have been wondering whether Mars ever did exist as a warmer planet, where its now frozen water, ice, was once pooled into large oceans. And recent evidence tended to support that view. But new observations over the last few months and years have thrown some cold water on that warm planet scenario. Joining me to talk about it is my first guest, Philip Christensen. He's Corrick Professor of Geological Sciences at Arizona State University. He's also the principal investigator for the Mars Thermal Emissions Imaging System, or THEMIS, and the Mars Thermal Emission Spectrometer, or TESS. He joins us from Tempe. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Christensen.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Is this the movement of Mars being so close to the Earth, does that help you at all, help your work at all?
It's inspirational, but having two spacecraft around there is going to give us a better look than I can get from my backyard. But it's certainly fun to go out and see the real thing.
So that's right. Your projects, your THEMIS and TESS are on two different spacecraft orbiting Mars, correct?
That is correct.
And the fact that we're closer to Mars doesn't help you any way with those?
Well, actually, it doesn't indirectly. We get a lot more data back because they're so close. The radio transmissions, we can send a lot more information. So we are actually swamped here with data coming back because we can communicate so well.
Mm-hmm. And you've been a proponent of this dry, this cold, dry theory of Mars before. Tell us about why this new evidence helps support that theory.
Well, basically, I'm a geologist, and I've been looking for the history of Mars that's locked up in the rocks. On the Earth, that's how we understand the ancient history of the Earth, is by looking at rocks. And some rocks, in particular rocks like limestones or carbonate rocks, on the Earth, those contain the record of ancient oceans here on the Earth. So by looking at the rocks of Mars, the question has been, can we understand the ancient climate of Mars by what rocks were formed very early in Mars history? And so for decades now, there's been a holy grail search for limestones on Mars, which, if present, would argue that Mars, like the Earth, had oceans early in its history. Those oceans reacted with the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and would have produced very large amounts of limestone rock. We haven't found any. We've been looking for 4 or 5 years now with the TESS instrument, and we haven't seen any hint of limestones whatsoever. The recent results that Josh Banfield and a couple of us published say we have found tiny amounts of limestone rock or carbonate minerals. So it says we can see them with the TESS instrument, but not nearly as much as one would have suggested or proposed if Mars had truly had oceans.
Mm. So you're looking for the white sands of Dover. Something like that, on that scale.
Yeah.
And instead you're finding what?
We're finding tiny amounts of dust. 1 or 2% carbonate dust on Mars. And that actually isn't, we can form that amount of carbonate dust simply by the rocks interacting with the atmosphere of Mars. We don't need oceans to make that amount of dust. Just the water vapor in the atmosphere alone can produce the amount of carbonate that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. And does that mean that there was never a time when there was liquid warm water on the surface, or just not that there were giant oceans on the surface?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think in my mind, Mars has always been cold. There's no question that it has large amounts of water. In fact, in the last year or so, we've seen evidence of ice and snow and glacial features. So Mars has a lot of water. The real question has been, has it been warm water like oceans, or has it been frozen, ice-covered lake, glaciers perhaps? The evidence that we're proposing suggests that the water on Mars was almost always frozen or certainly extremely cold. Mars has these massive river channels, and water clearly flowed through those. It flowed out and ponded in large areas, but the lack of limestone rock suggests that that ponded water was very cold. It froze rapidly, and it never had time to produce limestones like we see here on the Earth.
Then how would you explain a couple of things? One, the rivers that look like gullies, dried up riverbeds with torrential water flowing through it.
I think that many of those look like they came right out of the ground. In other words, a catastrophic release of water. One of the suggestions has been that there was ground ice, lots of ice in the ground that was melted by some form of heat, volcanic heat being a good possibility. You melt that ice, it roars across the surface and carves these massive river channels. It ponds, in some low depression and immediately begins to freeze. So I think you can have the river channels that we see without having to invoke warm oceans and standing bodies of liquid water. I think it freezes pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. So then it's the water is still there, it's just below the surface.
Exactly. And if anything, our view of Mars today is wetter than it was a decade ago. We've seen, evidence from the neutron data on Mars Odyssey. Other data sets suggest that there truly is a tremendous amount of water on Mars. But it seems to be at high latitudes, at mid latitudes, frozen in the ground, permafrost type features. So, imagine the frozen tundra of the Earth as opposed to the Bahamas or some tropical ocean.
Mm-hmm. Does this make us then reassess our thoughts when we think maybe there was a warm tropical climate holding oceans before, that those oceans might have been the primordial places for life to begin? Does that mean we reassess how the chances of life may have sorted itself out there?
Well, it's certainly a piece of the puzzle. On the other hand, there's evidence on the Earth that some of the earliest life may have actually begun in very extreme environments, very hot places, hot springs, for example. And, you can go to places on the Earth, Iceland and Greenland being examples, where there's ice and glaciers, but there's volcanic heat, and that volcanic heat melts the water and you have hot springs. So I think you can have, and Mars clearly has huge volcanoes, so I think the question of life on Mars really is not altered too much. We don't need the warm oceans. Hot springs are plenty good enough to get life started.
Now, we have two American probes headed to Mars to land there in January. There's a British probe that's going to land in December, and they're going to be looking for evidence of water, correct?
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about that and how possibly your observations with your sensors on these orbiting satellites around Mars may help guide where to go.
Well, interestingly enough, the TESS instrument has already been very important in guiding one of the rovers to a place near the equator where we found another mineral, an interesting mineral that we believe formed in water. It's a mineral called hematite. We believe hematite forms on the Earth primarily involves water. So there's a unique place on Mars, a few hundred miles in diameter, where it does look as though there were hot springs or some hot process that produced liquid water for some amount of time. So we're going to that site to look at one of the few places on Mars that does seem to have mineral evidence for a lot of liquid water in its past. And we're going to land and look around and say, what really did happen here? The minerals have drawn us to that site, but we want to land and look up close and really understand if there was water there, what else did it do? I mean, is there any possibility that life or something like it, some interesting things were going on early in Mars history at this site? The second site has been chosen mostly by the photogeologists looking at a crater called Gusev that's been proposed that had one of these lakes. And even, a cold body of water with ice on it, it may not form limestone, but it would still be a very interesting place to go look. So that second rover is going to go land in what we think may be an ancient lake bed, and again, look and see what might have happened on Mars at that place.
So they're not going to be looking for actual icicles, things like that, or digging down for real frozen water, they're going to be looking for remnants of past history that would have formed these minerals.
That's right. These particular rovers are going to the equatorial region, which today on Mars is warm enough that there really isn't much ice near the surface. So these are, as you say, these are places where the morphology and the minerals point to a lot of water in early in Mars history. And again, in looking for life, it makes sense to go look at some of the older places to see what the early climate and history of Mars was like. Hopefully, future landers will go to the higher latitudes where we think ice is today near the surface, where they could actually dig down and sample some of that ice today.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's talk this week, ever since the Shuttle Commission released its report about where it thinks the American space effort should be. Do you think that should be reevaluated with possibly a little more effort toward robotics aimed at Mars?
Well, I have spent my entire career sending robots to Mars, and so I'm clearly a strong proponent of that and fascinated by what you can do with robots.
It's a loaded question, I realize.
Well, and we can certainly do a lot,
right.
But as a robot guy, there's nothing I'd like to see more in my lifetime than humans walking on the surface of Mars. I mean, as a geologist, you can go out with a rock hammer, pick up a rock, break it open, look at it with a magnifying glass, and in seconds answer some fundamental questions. Robots can do that. It's just a lot more complicated. So hopefully it'll be a mixture of both.
That's what was said about sending men to the moon, sending geologists to the moon in the last stages of the moon. I think Dr. Schmidt on Apollo 17 was that he was a geologist. He could open up these rocks, take a look at them.
And it worked really well. I mean, the early robots paved the way, and the geologists really did see things in real time with their eyes that led them to particular rocks, to particular places. It really was a good way to explore the moon.
But do you think you're going to have to, one of these robotic missions that are going now may have to send back some sort of fantastic results to spur the politics that would take to spend the money to go to put people on the moon?
I think it's going to be a combination. I think one of the things we're finding is Mars, with every mission, gets more and more interesting, more and more intriguing. We're seeing evidence of snow and glaciers and little gullies melting today. I think Mars is becoming an interesting place, and whether you need a fantastic discovery or just a whole lot of, wow, this is a fascinating world in and of itself, I think interest in Mars will continue to grow. And the other side is, I think the technology and the cost and the effort to send humans to Mars will get easier and easier over the next decades, and hopefully the two will come together to where there's enough interest and it's reasonably it's doable to send humans there that will do it.
And it may not be the Americans, the Chinese, other people.
Certainly. There's a lot of countries who are developing a capability, and maybe it might even, a miracle might occur, and it might be a consortium of nations who can pull this off.
Yeah, we'd like to see that. Dr. Christensen, thanks for joining us as always. And we'll have you back when you get some more pictures and data, please.
All right. It's my pleasure to be here.
Phil Christensen is the Corak Professor of Geological Sciences at Arizona State University. And he has a couple of those imaging cameras, the Themis and the TESS, orbiting Mars on two different satellites. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to switch gears, talk something maybe a little bit Martian, science, pseudoscience, superstition. What do you believe? Can you... can you rationalize it? How do we know what is superstition, where that begins, where science begins? We'll have an interesting discussion. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News.